You're listening to Tail Chasing, home of the spine tingling, bump in the dark, bite my neck, and call me taken podcast. Urban fantasy for writers and readers.
Warning, this episode contains many spoilers. Now, we've tried to keep them as low spoilage as possible, but sometimes in talking about something regarding the books, it leads us into writing questions and other things. So I'm basically going to tell you to listen at your own risk, and that you should definitely read the Black Wings series because it's amazing, and don't let our spoilers bring you down.
Welcome to Tail Chasing. Why don't you tell us who you are and what you write?
Okay, so my name is Christina Henry, and I'm the author of the Blackwing series, which is about an agent of death named Madeline Black, and it's an urban fantasy series that's set in Chicago.
Cool. It's an awesome series. I am so in love with that series, and I love you. I want to talk to you about this kind of too. You've managed to write what I would consider, I mean, it's not dark, deep, dark, gritty urban fantasy, but it's not light, happy, fluffy urban fantasy either. You've managed to like mix both of those. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason is because of one of your characters, Beazle.
Yes.
Who everybody needs to. You have to make a stuffed animal.
I've been trying to actually look into this because I've had a lot of requests. You know, I think like a Beazle Beanie Baby would probably the best thing.
And he's got to have a bib that says Dunkin' Donuts on it.
Or like with a little cup at the bottom, you know, a little netting at the bottom to catch the popcorn that doesn't go in his.
Oh yeah, right, yeah.
So,
totally. So how when you decided to write your book? First off, did you decide that you wanted a series? Did you know it was going to be a series, or did it just start with one?
Well, I mean, I think that when you're writing the book, when you're writing your first book, I think that you hope that somebody wants it as a series.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, you know, you're kind of just hoping to sell one book.
Right.
So I wrote the book thinking, you know, there's room here for a series, but I wanted the first book to be closed enough so that if it ended up only being one book, you know, that readers wouldn't be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So I had intended it to be a trilogy originally. And then it turned out that people liked it. So now there's going to be 9.
Oh, are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
9 books. Okay. All right. Let's get off of the subject of Gabriel, because I was so mad at you. You have no idea how mad I was at you.
I do, because I've, as a reader and, you know, as a viewer, you know, of films and stuff, I've certainly read books or seen movies where characters that I've loved have died, but I felt that it was really necessary in a series where the main character's life is sort of ruled by death, that something absolutely irrevocable happened, that her life, she should not be on the fringes of death. Death should affect her directly.
Right.
And in the first book, her best friend dies, but you don't have an opportunity to really get to know Patrick.
Right.
In the way that you get to know Gabriel. And, you know, I absolutely sympathize. I don't know if you've read the Harry Potter series or not.
I have.
So hopefully I'm not spoiling anything. Hopefully every one of your listeners has also read or seen the movies.
I'll put a big spoiler sound in there.
But when Sirius Black died, I was walking around the house like my best friend died, and you know, I was bawling, and my husband hadn't read the book yet, and he knew who had died just based on my reaction.
Oh, no.
He was like, I know that Sirius died because you're hysterical. So I do. I understand it as a reader, but I felt that it was necessary as a writer. I felt that it was necessary for Maddie's character, and I felt that, like I said, you have a character who is, her life is death, that she needed to be touched by death in a really direct way, not a peripheral way.
Right. Well, at least we got him for 3 books.
I love him.
Go ahead.
Any of you ever could. So it was hard for me. It was hard.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how was it like to write it? How was it like after you were done writing it? I mean,
it's not easy. I mean, I knew that it was going to happen. I had actually talked about it with my editor back when I turned in the first book. I had talked about it as a possibility. I didn't know exactly when it was going to happen. But I always knew that it was going to happen. So I always had in the back of my mind, that I was going to have to do it. It was very emotional for me to write the scene. And then afterward, you know, I just had to get through it. I write in chronological order, so I don't write like a chapter and then another chapter and then, you know, put them in order and then fill in the spaces. I actually write the book from beginning to end. So
okay.
I always knew that it was coming. So when I got to that part of the book, I just sat down and just kind of did it in one shot. I didn't try to like spread it out over a period of days or anything. I was like, okay, I know this is going to happen and I just need to get through it.
Right. So actually I just looked on your Amazon page and you've got another book coming out in February.
Yes. Black City. That's the fifth book.
I need to catch up because I'm on number 4 and you have no idea. I'm in Kansas at the moment because
mm-hmm.
of my mom. And I live in New Jersey and I went back to New Jersey and of course all of my mail has been piling up. And one of the first things I got handed when I got home was an ARC of Black Lament.
Yeah.
And I jumped around and was like, yay, it's this book, yay. And people looked at me kind of crazy. And so thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, generally my interviews are a little bit more put together. So we've spoken about the fact that there is some darkness in there because of the death that Madeline has to face and ends up facing personally. Did Beazle come to you or because I've thought about, you know, since I've read your books and all the books that I read, I kind of, you know, kind of look at them and go, okay, you know, I think as a writer, it's good to read books and you have a tendency to kind of I don't want to say that, like, I read your book and I'm, like, thinking, okay, well, now I've got to find, you know, this kind of a character.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah, inspired by certain things that the writers have done and... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I totally
So, understand. Did you plan for the comic relief or did he just appear?
So, when I was originally conceived of the series, I just had a really vague idea that I wanted... the main character to be a Reaper. And I didn't really have an idea beyond that. And I was sort of picturing someone who was tall and dark and broody and a lot like Gabriel, actually. Gabriel was actually going to be the main character. And then I hear things more than I see things.
Mm-hmm.
Writing. That's why there's a lot of dialogue in my books. I prefer to write dialogue. I prefer to hear the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about the book and I could hear Beazle talking to Maddie. And then that sort of the whole direction of the book changed from there. And I'd always known that I'd wanted the main character to have a sidekick, because when you're writing in first person, there's always a danger that you're going to wind up trapped in the main character's head. And especially in a book where things are dark, then you can just end up sort of trapped in a cycle of doom and gloom, because you're always with this one person. And so I was trying to think of a character who would always be at home, so therefore always available whenever Maddie needed someone to talk to. Because if you have a roommate or husband or something like that, presumably they have their own lives, you know, and come and go. They're not always going to be right there when the person comes home, but Beazle's a home guardian. So he is always there. And if he's not there, then he's in her pocket. So he's always, basically he's always available for me as a writer, so that I can have someone there who can, you know, make that funny comment or do that thing that will sort of lighten the tensions, because there's I think that there is a lot of darkness in these books. And if you don't have something to leaven that tension occasionally, I think it becomes too much for the writer and for the reader.
Right. Do you have an, this is your first series, right?
Yes, it is.
Do you have suggestions or advice on how somebody who doesn't have a sidekick for their character avoid doing that?
Well, are you writing in first person? I guess it depends on if you're writing in first person.
First person, yeah.
Writing in first person, I think that you do want to find as many opportunities as you can for the characters to converse with other people. So that, you know, whether or not they have a regular sidekick. But it is something that a lot of writers use. Jim Butcher uses it in the Dresden Files. You know, Bob the Skull is sort of the character that's used there. Nancy Holzner has, I don't know if you've read the Dead Town series.
Not yet.
She writes, you know, also the character, the main character is, it's in first person, and the main character has a sort of zombie sidekick that she talks to. I mean, you just need, I think you kind of need to find a regular character, if not like an actual sidekick, who can kind of get the main character out of their head.
Right.
I think that's probably the most important thing.
Okay. That's cool. You were talking about hearing the book while you were writing. I had a question off of that, and it's completely gone now.
The train went off the track.
it totally derailed. So what's been the hardest part for you in writing the series? I mean, when you first sold the first book and they said, okay, we want more. Were you like freaking out trying to think of what to write, or how did you plan the overarching story? That's a big question that I'm curious from authors who have series, because just about everybody has a series, is how they got, I can see how they got their main plot per book. But the overarching plot for the stories it's kind of like, how do you step back far enough to see what that is?
I don't know. I mean, I think you might be giving me too much credit, because I don't, I mean, I have like a general sort of plan, but it's not like a totally laid out plan. And I know I've talked to other writers who said the same thing, because I think, like I said, when you sell the first book, you don't know what's going to happen. And when I sold the first book, I sold it, the sale was for three books in total. So I said, okay, let's, you know, I started thinking of it as a trilogy. It was going to be three books. And then before I had even, I think I just finished writing the second book. And then Penguin told me they wanted three more.
Nice.
So I then now had six books. So
right.
Because I had six books and I just finished writing the second book, that opened up a lot of possibilities, because if it had only been a trilogy, I probably would not have had Gabriel die. Because
right.
It's very unfair
right.
to leave them that way after three books, and that's a real downer.
Right.
So, but because I was about to start the third book, then it opened up a lot of possibilities. So what I've done now, I just finished writing the sixth book. And I guess that I've conceived of, you know, each, the series is like sets in sets of three, mm-hmm. sort of an overarching story that goes through each three books. So that Black Wings to Black Howl is sort of the story of Maddie discovering who she is and falling in love with Gabriel and the course of that relationship, and then that ends. And then in the third, which is Black Lament, Black City, and then it'll be Black Heart, which will be out next fall, is the story of who is Maddie now, and now that Gabriel's gone, and
right.
what role is she going to play now in Lucifer's kingdom? You know, how long can she hold out is probably the big question of the third. And then, you know, the final third, I'm not entirely sure
right.
what's going to happen yet, but I have a general idea of what's going to happen. I think because I don't actually plot my books.
Okay.
I know what has to happen at the beginning. I know sort of where I want to go at the end, but other than that, I just sort of write through. So I write, like I said, I write chronologically. I write from page 1 to page 350, and I don't write out of order, and I just kind of see how the story unspools.
Cool.
And I also say, you know, that probably no matter what I do, somebody's not going to be completely satisfied, because I think that's just the nature of writing a book, you know, is that readers always want certain things, or they expect certain things. And like I said, as a reader myself, I've experienced this reading other books. And I think that you know, you want something, but the author has another intention.
I can see that. I can see where, like, for you know, example, you know, you've got one person who hopes Nathaniel gets redeemed, and then you get somebody else who and I'm completely spacing JB.
Mm-hmm, JB,
you know, and hopes, you know, something happens with JB. And so I can see how, you know, no matter where you go, you might end up with somebody going, well, that's not how I wanted it to end.
Right. And I think that, I don't know if you've read Charlene Harris's series, but I know that there's, you know, people who like Bill, and there's people who like Eric, and
right.
people who were like, you know, wondering why she was with Quinn. And, you know, I think that no matter what you do as an author, there's always going to be somebody who's not happy. So you really just have to make yourself happy. I think ultimately the advice I want to give.
Right. Have you had to deal with very much unhappiness? I mean, I don't know how much time you have for fan mail and stuff like that, or even at the conventions. Have you had to deal with very much of that upsetness at you?
I did have a couple of people write me some very angry letters. But other than that, I mean, I don't read my reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the majority of people who complain about things that happen in a book, do so like on Goodreads or Amazon reviews, and I don't actually read them because I don't think it's healthy.
Right.
I don't think it's healthy for you to know if someone gave a book 5 stars, and I don't think it's healthy for you to know if someone gave a book 1 star. I think that if they gave it 5 stars, it gives you a false sense of security. Mm-hmm. I think if they give it 1 star, you know, I think it can kind of ruin your day. When I first started out, I read all of my reviews and I realized that it's not really good for me to read them.
So do you still currently, I mean, I talked to somebody else the other day and they were saying, you know, you never really get over thinking what you write is crap.
Mm-hmm. That's probably true.
If you're not looking at your reviews anymore, mm-hmm. How do you stop yourself from going, this is crap, I can't turn this in?
I don't know if...
Or are you just that cool and you have such cool self-esteem?
I don't know if I have cool self-esteem, but I feel very confident in the book. When I hand in a book, I feel very confident that I've told the story that I wanted to tell. I can't control what other people think of the book. So like I said, I just don't worry about it. You know, there's always going to be some people who are really happy and some people who, you know, don't enjoy the book for whatever reason. And I can't control that. So I just have to be happy with the book, with myself. I don't know that I necessarily think that everything I write is crap, but I do know that it's hard for me to go back and read my first book. I feel that I've improved as a writer since I wrote the first book. So it's hard for me to go back and look at that book. It's like looking into a time capsule.
Right.
Like,
were you going to say something?
I was going to say it's a lot like looking at your yearbook photo.
Oh, right.
And seeing and saying, was I really that person? I think that a lot of writers feel that way, that whatever the last thing they handed in is the best thing that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that they wrote first is, you know, like looking at their teenage self.
Right. What about, how do you deal with, do you have to deal with very much from your editors? I mean, since you're under contract to do 9 books, do you, I don't know, I've never really asked anybody how much that the publisher is involved in making you change things.
So if you have a good working relationship with your editor, which I really do, the editor just helps you make the book better. So she's asked for changes on books, but I've never felt that changes were unreasonable.
Right.
And if I felt really strongly about something, she doesn't prevent me from keeping it in the book. Frankly, your editor probably, has a clearer eye than you do because you're so close to the story.
Right.
So, the worst thing you can do as a writer is think that your prose is untouchable, and that it can't be improved, because pretty much everyone's prose can be improved.
Right.
You know, especially, like I said, if you have a good relationship with your editor and they start to understand your work and the way that you work, and when they ask for changes, you know, should treat them with an open mind and know that they're just trying to make the book better.
Right.
And I love my editor.
Well, that's awesome. Hopefully other people, I want a cool editor. Does anybody want to be my editor? I was going to ask you about deadlines. I mean, it's probably, I'm assuming, gotten easier for you, but when you got the first book done and then they said, okay, we want 3,
mm-hmm.
and then you were suddenly on not your deadline, but their deadline. How did, I mean, was it difficult for you? Did you just have to, I mean, what I'm facing with at the moment is I set myself a deadline.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, if I don't hit it, the world is not going to end, except I'm going to feel a little bit bad.
Right.
But,
Well, let me answer your question
yeah.
about deadlines. So, when I wrote the first book, I had written about 60 pages of the book, kind of piecemeal. I did 5 pages here, I did 10 pages there. And then another friend of mine was actually doing NaNoWriMo. And I said, you know what? This is a good opportunity to finish this book. So I put myself on a self-imposed deadline and I wrote 8 pages a day for about 6 weeks. And I finished the book. And then I started sending it out right away because if you don't send it out, you never will.
Right.
That's the other thing. Once you have a manuscript in hand, don't fiddle with it and don't be afraid. Just send it out because you're going to be rejected. Everybody is. You'll get multiple rejections. But you have to start sending out the book and
How many drafts did you have? Did you do, I mean, did you do more than just one draft?
I'm unusual. I'm an unusual writer. I always hand in the first draft. And I haven't had a lot of changes, but I think it has to do with the way that I work. Because I write by hand. And then I put it into the Word document. So it's getting edited as I go along, but it's essentially the first draft. It's like a polished first draft.
Doesn't your hand get tired?
Sometimes it does. Like any other muscle, if you use it enough, it doesn't get as worn out. If I write like 15 pages a day, in a day, then I'll start to cramp up. But I usually write like 5 to 8 pages, and that's fine.
So, go
As
ahead.
I finished the draft, I started sending it out to agents. After about 6 months, I hadn't found an agent, and Ace is one of the few major publishers that accepts direct submissions. So I was very confident that the series was saleable, so I just put myself out there. I sent the book directly to Ace, or sent the they ask for a synopsis in the first 10 pages. And a week later, I was asked for a full manuscript, and a week after that, I had a 3-book contract.
Wow.
So,
Is didn't okay, did you say a little while ago that your that Penguin asked for
it's
nine?
Ace is an imprint of Penguin.
Okay, gotcha. Just trying to
Yeah,
follow along.
Ace is an imprint of Penguin. So yeah, they're the sci-fi fantasy imprint of Penguin.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
I did not have one when I sold my first 6 books.
What does your agent do for you that now that you didn't have before?
Your agent will absolutely get you a better contract than you can get on your own. Your agent also knows what rights you should keep.
So do you now that you've got your series, and it's no longer a self-imposed deadline, I'm assuming that, do you have does your publishing company put you on a deadline?
Yes, absolutely. They write it into the contract.
Cool. Okay. So how do you just have to make yourself sit down and write it?
The last, let's see. So after I wrote Black Knight, So I had the first three books were on one contract, and then the next three books were on another contract. And because of the timing of the way the contracts were written, it ended up being that I wrote Black Howl, Black Lament, Black City, and Black Heart, which I just finished. I wrote those four books in about 22 months.
Okay.
That's
pretty awesome.
Maybe less. No, 22 months. Yeah, because I handed in Black Howl in the summer of last year. I handed in Black Lament in the fall of last year. I handed in Black City in summer of this year, and then I just handed in Black Heart. So, yeah, and some, yeah, maybe even a little less than, maybe like 20 months.
So they basically give you, I'm assuming it sounds like about 6 months to maybe get it to them.
it's to your benefit when you have a new series, if you can do it, to write a little bit faster, because there's so many series, and you really want to establish an audience and kind of keep that audience with you so that they don't forget about you.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of the reasons why the books have been released so close together. But I asked for a couple extra months.
Right.
Book, because I need a little break. But yeah, right. if you are under deadline, the only way you can get it done is to write a little bit every day. And everybody kind of has their pain point. Mm-hmm. You know, how much you can write. Mostly I try to write about 5 pages a day, which is, it's like 1,250 words
mm-hmm.
a day. And some days I write a little more and some days I write a little less, but I try to keep in that sort of general area. And so that basically results in, you know, I'm writing the bulk of the book in like about 3 months, maybe.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. What did you think about, we're totally switching subjects. What did you think about getting to be on panels and stuff?
It's cool. It's really cool. There's nothing cooler than sitting, you know, between Charlene Harris and Janine Frost. And saying, wow, I don't know what I'm doing up here, but I'm sitting here with really cool people who are great writers. You know, mostly I just try not to make a fool of myself, you know, when I'm on these panels. The first panel I did was with Laurel K. Hamilton and Chloe Neal.
Oh, man.
Oh, so I'm sitting there saying, okay, I'm sitting between, you know, two New York Times bestselling authors, have these huge followings. I had one book out. And Laurel was talking, and I sort of got so wrapped up in her answer. The moderator had asked a question, and Laurel was answering the question, and I sort of got wrapped up in her answer, and then she looked at me, and then the moderator looked at me, and I was like, I forgot the question.
Well, that happens.
So, I mean, I definitely get a little starstruck myself. But it's cool, you know, because I have an opportunity to meet people whose books I've read. And I'm a fan of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So I still don't feel like I belong up there, but hopefully eventually that feeling will go away.
Yeah, because you totally do. So stop that. What conventions do you have any that you go to, you know, more often than not, so that anybody that would like be looking to go see you would find you at?
I haven't done anything, I guess, twice yet. I was at New York Comic Con, not this year, but last year. I think I might go next year.
I hope so, because then I'm going to come and see you and say hi, because I'm right over the river.
I was at C2E2 this year, which is the Chicago Comic Con, and I'm probably going to do that one again next spring. So that's my hometown con, so I probably will end up doing that one regularly. I was at RT this year. I don't think I'm going next year. It's not just, it's sort of like when the cons fall with my writing schedule and my running schedule. Right. And, you know, if I'm going to run a marathon, I'm not going to plan to go to a con like in the middle of my marathon training schedule.
Right.
So,
right.
Stuff like that.
You might, I don't know if you've, have you heard about Authors After Dark?
Yeah, someone else did tell me about, Authors After Dark, and that does sound like a really interesting.
It's a lot of fun. I got to go to one of them,
mm-hmm.
and it's totally, because it's for the readers.
Mm-hmm.
The readers are totally starstruck,
mm-hmm.
because you get to eat lunch and dinner and breakfast, you know, at the same table with the authors you love to read, mm-hmm. you know. So, and it's. And I came home with so much swag. I could not believe how much swag I came home with. It's amazing. What kind of swag do you give out at your cons?
I usually have bookmarks. I'm sort of uninteresting swag wise.
That's not true.
I don't have I don't have buttons and fancy stuff. Like I just have my bookmarks. I think that I think I just always assume that nobody will know who I am. So when I was at RT, I was, you know, in the hall, like where all the authors, there's like literally dozens and dozens of authors, you know, all lined up at tables, for readers to come and talk to and have their book signed. And I was always shocked when people came up and said they'd come just to see me. And I was like, really? Just to see me? but Anne Rice is here.
No, I think that that's pretty cool. Yeah. I can imagine it would be a very cool feeling.
It is cool. I mean, it's cool, but it's still surprising to me. So I'm always, it's really sort of grateful that people want me to sign their books.
Switching a little bit, is that something that an agent does for you too? Is manage your marketing, or do you still have to do that a lot?
No, you have a publicist with your publisher, and okay. a certain amount of marketing that the publisher does for you, but a lot of appearances and things are sort of decided by you, and you have to get in touch with the convention, and or if you know you want to have a signing at a bookstore, you know, yeah, you kind of have to do a lot of that stuff yourself.
Right.
You, like I said, your publicist will do a certain amount of things for you. They might set up certain appearances. Like my first appearance was actually set up by my publicist. A lot of the blog tours, interviews and things might be coordinated by your publicist if you so choose, or you can do it yourself. But no, your agent doesn't really do that for you.
Gotcha. I know that you're on Twitter. Intermittent. Well, I'm sure because of your writing schedule. But would you tell us what your Twitter is so people can follow you if they want to?
It's C_Henry_author.
What kind of things do you tweet about?
I guess I really haven't figured out what I should be doing with Twitter. So sometimes I tweet about stuff that I'm doing, or I tweet links to interviews I've done, or kind of similar to what I do on my Facebook page. I I never really know what people are interested in. And I this might go along with being shocked that people want me to sign their books, but I just don't know, like, why would anyone be interested in what I did today? So I never know what to put. I just sort of make it up as I go along, but I'm not very good with Twitter. I'm a little bit better
with Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you why.
Why?
Because it's like, well, I think for the majority of I only know female readership, so I'm sorry, guys, because I know you, there are some guys who listen, but I think for the majority of female readers who spend a lot of time, you know, and they have favorite series, you know, favorite authors who've got particular series, mm-hmm. It's really not that much of a stretch than getting to say, like, go see Britney Spears, you know, and actually talk to her. I mean, it Britney Spears is like way up there, but say you've got a favorite TV show, you know, favorite series you get to watch, and like you get to hang out with them for a few minutes, you know, in an elevator. It's like seriously cool to you. Mm. And then, you know, with Twitter, just finding out who they are and getting to know, you know, what's going on with them, it makes you feel like you might have some sort of connection. So that's why.
Well, I mean, I understand why people go on Twitter, like on Twitter, like why people follow certain people on Twitter. I just don't know what they want from me. You know what I mean?
They want to know what you're doing. Like if you have like something special you're going to go to, or, you know, if you had a, you know, a hard time writing today, or if you had a shockingly brilliant idea writing today, or, you know, if, you know, Beazle, you know, said something that totally amused you today, or, I mean, just anything. That's what I like to see from authors. Like, I can't keep up with all of my Twitters because I have five separate Twitter accounts for different things. But when I do look, you know, at certain things, and it's always interesting to see, the authors that talk amongst themselves and what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting. But no, I think Twitter is definitely, I'm famous for trying to sell Twitter to authors and saying, you know, you need Twitter because it'll help you get people. Facebook, I myself have trouble with Facebook, so I'm just the opposite. So I don't know what to put on Facebook for myself. So.
No, I think it's because I started using Facebook first, so I just feel.
What kind of stuff do you put on Facebook?
I mean, like today I put up a link to an interview I had done, you know, over the weekend. I put a picture of the gingerbread house my son decorated.
Cool.
You know, just, you know, nothing special. I guess I'm just not really good at it. I think that people who follow me on Facebook or Twitter are, you know, not that entertained, but I do my best.
Well, I don't think it has to be about, you know, you have to entertain anybody. The people, like I said, I think people just really want a chance to get to know the authors they like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at me. I mean, I was like, oh my God, I get to talk to you. Yay. And, you know, so, I mean, and it's like that when I get to interview anybody who I consider you famous. I mean,
oh no,
you might not think you're famous, but you are. I mean, you've got four out and the fifth one coming, and, you know, so yeah, you're famous.
No way.
You're famous to all of us urban fantasy readers, and for anybody who hasn't read the series, they have to go get it because it's amazing.
Okay.
And it's, I really, I liked the series because I like pretty much anything that has to do with angels.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was going, I was on Amazon and I was just going through covers because covers really kind of inspire me when I'm feeling like, you know, I don't want to pursue writing. I don't care. But then I look at the covers and I think that they're so cool. And it was showing me all the different covers and I saw the one of Black Wings and I was like, ooh, well, let me stop here.
Yeah. And it's a great cover. I mean, I've been really happy with all of the covers. I think that, Chris Keller is the artist and just does amazing work. I feel so lucky because you have no control over the cover. Right.
How does that generally work? Does the publicist hire someone to do it and then basically tell them the synopsis and then they go from there?
Yeah, the publisher manages it. There's some input. I have a little bit of input where I can sort of say, well, I'd like this or that element to be in the cover. And then after that, you know, my editor takes my input and goes away and talks to marketing and, they talk to the artist and, the artist goes away with that input and then comes up with, whatever he comes up with and then brings it back and, you know, gets approved. But it's not like a process that I'm really involved in. So I just feel really lucky because I think all the covers are gorgeous.
Yeah, they're all awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that the one that's for the one that's coming in February is it struck me as lighter.
Mm-hmm.
All of the other covers were very dark. And it makes me wonder what has changed.
Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived by the cover.
Well, I don't mean that I think everything's going to be, you know, fairy tales and, you know, good fairy tales and, mm-hmm. and butterflies, but, you know, that's what occurred to me when I looked at it. I was like, oh, wow, she's kind of in the sunlight. Not really, but that's the way it kind of looks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's not going to be sunshine and butterflies. That's no butterflies allowed.
So has anybody told you, like, they cried at a certain point?
Yes.
Or, and how did you react?
Well, I had quite a few people tell me that they cried when they were reading books.
Cry like three or four times. Man.
I mean, obviously you don't want anyone to cry,
right?
But, on the other hand, you do think to yourself, okay, well, I succeeded.
Right.
You know, you were emotionally engaged enough to want to cry. So that means that I did something right. So of course you don't, like I said, you don't necessarily want to make somebody cry, but
like, oh, I'm sorry, but thank you.
But thank you so much. I'm so glad that you cried.
That's funny. Have you been on any other podcasts or has it been mostly blog tours?
I have not been on any other podcasts. I've done a lot of blog interviews. And like I said, I've done, like I said, some panels, and I did a video interview for Project Paranormal, which is something that ACE does. And I think, actually, it may be going up on their website soon. When it does, I'll tweet about it and Facebook and whatnot. But I went out there last winter and did an interview mostly about Black Lament.
Mm-hmm. And was being on camera weird for you?
Absolutely. very strange. I think it's also the same problem that I have you know, when I'm on a panel, I can't believe that anyone is interested in anything that I have to say. There's always this sort of thing in the back of my head going, what are you doing here? But, you know, I think it came out all right. Hopefully it came out.
I'm sure it came out just great. Is there anything that you wish you would have known that you know now?
I mean, I guess I wish I had known that I was going to do more than one or two books, because I might have planned a little better. You know, it's like, because you sort of, if you haven't planned ahead, then you're sort of, in a sense, sort of written yourself into a corner. Mm-hmm. And you have to find a way out of certain things. Like when I was writing the first book, I established this thing where Gabriel could heal her. And mm-hmm. now, like, into the sixth book, that's sort of problematic because she can always bounce back physically. You know, she never sort of has to carry the physical burdens of her job. So I kind of wish I had done something different there, but I have to work with
it's been a little bit since I've read the first book. Is that one? Which book was it that he healed her?
Well, he does it from the first book. So.
But did he, like, heal her in a way that means she can't ever, like, die?
No, she can die for sure. If someone, you know, because she actually dies in the first book. If somebody shot her, say, and no one's uh-huh. around to heal her, then she would die.
Right.
But the fact is that I sort of wrote this into the book, and then I realized, well, maybe.
So maybe you're thinking to yourself that, you know, if there's an angel around.
Right, exactly. So then it just becomes a little bit harder as a writer to make the reader feel her physical fatigue. So, but I mean, there's ways around it. So, you know, you just have to get creative.
Well, I can tell you for a fact, for as far as I am in Black Lament, I feel when I read it so far, I've had to take it in. I haven't been able to sit down and just read through it
mm-hmm.
because I feel physically tired.
Okay.
With her.
Well, that's
because.
Good.
Yeah, I mean it's sad, but it's like, wow, dude, you're bringing me down.
She's depressed and she's pregnant, and I am having been through a pregnancy myself. I can tell you that you're basically exhausted all the time. And that was something that when I was writing the book, I wanted, you know, the reader to really feel, you know, when you're pregnant, you're just tired all the time. And I think I napped every day for the first trimester. It's like, it's just so exhausting. And then if you throw Maddie's sort of regular, you know, activities off of being pregnant, I would hope. That you would start to feel like you're there with her.
Do you have a favorite character that you from the books?
I mean, I love to write Beazle. I think he's probably the sort of universal fan favorite. I found that it's becoming very interesting to write Nathaniel.
Okay.
That he's a character who has more complexity than I thought he did when I first conceived him.
That's cool. And I'm sure that's interesting for anybody reading the books, you know, to hear. And, you know, that's kind of cool. The jury's still out on Nathaniel.
It is, but he's definitely, he's fun to write.
That's cool. Well, we've pretty much almost talked for an hour, which is generally how long my interviews go. Is there anything that you want to pimp out or say, or?
No,
Yeah.
I guess not. I mean, I'm really glad that you wanted to talk to me, and I hope that I answered enough of your questions
Oh, you did. You did.
that I was able to answer. I'm sorry I can't answer certain ones, but
Oh, no,
I hope that the answers will be revealed to you later.
Right. Do you have your own website?
I do. It's ChristinaHenry.net. And again, like Facebook and Twitter, I only update it intermittently, and I'm not very good about it. But I do try to get on there occasionally, and I'll post news about appearances, and I probably will put the first chapter of the new book up
Oh, cool.
probably in January, probably sometime in January.
Neat. Okay. And do you have links to like your Facebook and your Twitter and everything on your website?
Yes, I do. I do.
Cool. Well, I will let you go and go about your life and easel and I hope it gets better.
What?
Well, Black Lament,
Yeah.
I'm sure
Oh,
it will,
using
but.
black cement. Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by better.
Yeah, I understand. I hope she becomes less depressed.
Yeah,
And
I think you might be it'll be different
right.
that way.
Oh, I was also gonna say I can't pronounce his name. Sam
Sam, I
from Dusk. Yeah, Semyon. I really like that character, and I think that it's really cool how anybody who hasn't read the books doesn't know that he can't speak. And I think that it's really you did a really good job of finding a way to animate him and put him in dialogue, you know?
Yeah,
Was that hard for you?
well, I mean, you just want to be able to have, you want the character to be able to participate, so that you can feel his character and so that you can feel his intelligence and his personality. So it takes a little bit of work, to do that, but I think it's worth it. And I really like that, he spends a lot of time with Beazle. So,
Yeah, it's cool that Beazle's got a best friend.
yeah, thank you, buddy.
Okay, well, I'm gonna let you go. Otherwise, I'll keep you on here all day talking about Beazle and Sam and everybody else. So, thank you very much for coming on Tail Chasing.
Thank
Take a second and comment on the site. Send me email. Or leave me voicemail at 201-830-1586 because I love getting your feedback and hearing what you have to say on the subject we both love. And remember, if you're going to chase a tail, proper feeding and care is required. If you're lucky, it might curl up and call you home.